Big shout for her. Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah, so my name's Raf and I'm an addict. Yeah, I'm not from Manchester or Liverpool. Yeah. Just wanna, yeah. Yeah. I haven't used drugs today, and I haven't thought about using drugs today. And that's a direct result of this beautiful 12-step program that gets me into a relationship with a God of my very, very little understanding, without which I have nothing. I have nothing. Everything is taken from me. Wilson puts it best. He says, of myself I am nothing, the Father doeth the work. Yeah, I read the book, I study the book. So I'll start at the beginning. I'm mixed race, but I'm very, very mixed race. I'm not just mixed race. You know? There's a lot going on, yeah. Really, yeah. So my mother was Glaswegian, Trinidadian. And my daddy was Pakistani. So I've got black family, I've got white family, and I've got Asian family. And what was the kind of underlining thing for me when I was growing up was I had different accents. So I'd go to my Indian family and I'd speak a certain way. I'd go to my black family, I'd speak a certain way. And then when I was with my white family, I'd speak a certain way. And it kind of, you know, it was almost like this chameleon-like quality I developed where I had to fit in. But I never, you know, I used to blame that for years and years. I used that. You know, I dined out on that. Well, it's 'cause I haven't got this, it's 'cause I don't belong. You know, that's why I'm an addict, you know. If you'd had my life, you know, all that bollocks, you know. But, so I grew up and I was very close to my mother. My mother had her own issues with prescription drugs and alcohol. And I ended up going into kids' homes. I was in kids' homes. And you know, I quite liked it there. I could do what I wanted, and I got bought stuff to behave myself, so I didn't really mind it. I fast forward to when I picked up. So I'm 57 now. So in the early 1980s. So 79, 80, I got my first custodial sentence. I got sent to a detention centre. I'm sure some of the older people in the room will remember them. I was in a place called Send and then another one called Blantyre House, which I quite liked. I liked the discipline of it and responsibility was taken off of me. So I was in there and then I came out and my older cousins... on the Pakistani side, they'd started, they'd got involved with the heroin business, you know, they were buying and selling brown powder. And I got involved, you know, just at a very low level. I was just a gopher. I was the tea boy. Go and do this, go and do that, drop this off here, pick up that money, do this, do that. And, you know, I think I was 17, 18, and I had a black Audi Quattro with gold wheels on it. I had a proper fat chops, you know. You know, I had some, you know, I dressed goods, you know, all that stuff, plenty of, all the exterior stuff. No girls, because I was terrified of them, but anyway, I had all the kind of Miami Vice type stuff, yeah, and the haircuts, yeah. So, and what happened was I was dropping off something with these old hippies, because back then it was different. In the 80s, it was a very, very different landscape to what it is now with drug use. You know, this is at the very beginning of the heroin epidemic, you know. And I met these guys, and I'd never met people like them before. They were just really cool. And I used to sit and chill with them, and I'd smoke a bit of weed, and I'd see them, and they were smoking this brown powder on foil. Because I always thought that heroin, you had to, like, you know, inject it. But these guys were smoking it. And I had a go. You know, it was just before my 18th birthday, I had a go. And I fell in love. You know, that's the bottom line of it. I fell in love with it. I loved it. You know, I wasn't trying to fill a hole in my soul. It wasn't about, you know, mental and emotional pain. I fucking loved a bit of gear. So I carried on working for me family, you know, and I was the worst drugs courier in the world, you know. I was like the Forrest Gump of the drug dealing world. I'd always lose the parcel, come back with an excuse. Oh, well, they didn't have the money, right? They were playing this music, it was the Grateful Dead, and I fell asleep, and I woke up, and it was gone, you know. All those kind of things, yeah. But it kind of progressed. I got into the, yeah, I'd had an heroin habit, I think, for about two years. Before I had a relationship, before I had sex with a woman, you know, because I must have been about 21, something like that, 20, 21. And that's quite significant to me. You know, that really is. Because what I can honestly say is the longest lasting love affair of my life was with brown powder. Yeah. So anyway, I met a girl, first girl I properly kissed, right? And, you know, we got married. She was a bit older than me. We had a couple of kids. I got a prison sentence, you know, because as I say, I can't sell drugs. You know, I get sent to jail. And shit at it, you know. I used to go back and forward to Pakistan quite a lot in the 80s. And I used to get sent over there to test the parcel, but I'd always get lost as well, you know. I'd send people out finding me. Yeah. Appalling, really. But that's how it was. So I got a prison sentence. You know, we had some children. I come out. I picked up again. She divorced me. I used. And it was never that big an issue because I never struggled to get the money because it was always freely available to me. And then I had a game changer. I discovered crack cocaine. But it wasn't crack cocaine, it was base, it was wash rock, you know. So I met these guys in South London, yeah. And yeah, yeah, do I owe you money? Yeah. So where I'd been kind of functioning, well, I say functioning, I was fucking functioning addict, in and out of jail, psychiatric hospitals and detoxes. Yeah, yeah, I got away with it. Oh, I'll tell you about this, you'll like this. He knows about it. right? There used to be a detox in Ealing called St. Bernard's, and it was the Max Glatt unit, yeah? So this was just old school psychiatric hospital, lock wards, and it was just rows of beds, and it was all alcoholics in there. But they used to have two beds for drug addicts, yeah? And I had my name on one. So I was in the Max Glatt, and back then there was a drug called Hemenevrin, which was like, it was to stop withdrawals from alcohol, but they didn't, you know, they wouldn't give you methadone, so they just give you that. And they were these big eggs with this kind of toxic juice in them. And there was an old boy, an old like street vagrant type drinker, big bushy beard, you know, fucking dirty black hands. And he was my best mate there. I got on really well with him. I always go straight for them. I like them. They're my people. They're my people. They get it, yeah? So I'm like that. What's that Hemenevrin stuff they give you? Yeah, this is an insight into where my head was at, yeah? And he said, oh, it's really good, you know. And I'm like that. Oh, is it? And he's like that. He's like that. Yeah, this is the stuff that killed Keith Moon. The first thing I said was, can you inject it? You see the heads, yeah? That's whilst I'm in a sort of locked psychiatric unit coming off the gear, yeah. So anyway, yeah, I stumbled in and out of places. And I could get away with it. You know, I still had my teeth, I still had my veins, I still had my self-respect. It's quite charming. You know, I never struggled, you know, although my wife had left me as soon as she got to know me. I kind of, you know, other women weren't really an issue. But then I picked up the pipe, yeah, and that was like falling off a cliff. It was like falling off a cliff. You know, everything went. You know, because it don't matter who you are on a bit of tackle. You can do a certain amount. You know, you fall asleep, don't you? Because I'm greedy, very greedy addict, you know. But with a pipe, it fucking sent me insane. I went nuts with it. You know, I really, really lost the plot with it. Some of my family who had employed me to do, you know, be the Joey for them, they just distanced themselves. They says, no more, fuck all more I do with him. And then I got a prison sentence. I'd met another woman and had another child, but I got a prison sentence. Yeah. So I've got this sentence, and I was away for, yeah, it was 5 years, 8 months. And out of the 5 years, 8 months, I was clean. I was clean for nearly 5 years, off the back of a resentment, because I got a slap. I was in Coldingley, a couple of guys gave me a slap, I was humiliated, my family were around, someone took me under their wing. I had no program. I was just, you know, off the back of resentment, some badness really. I didn't use. I was in the gym, I was in the library, I was in the gym. In the library gym, yeah? I got out, and the day I got out, they moved me back to London, so I was in the Ville, they let me out of the Ville, I was walking down Cowley Road, I was like that, right, I'm not smoking crack. I don't want it. I know what happens. I'm not having a bit of gear, yeah? I'm going to have a couple of cans of Stella. Yeah? So I go into this shop, no fucking Stella. You got any Red Stripe? Yeah. Got 4 cans of Red Stripe. So I'm walking down the street, and back then, I know it's hard to believe looking at me now, but I was quite well put together because I've been, you know, I've been giving it some for a few years and not using. So I walked down the street, I drank these 4 cans of Red Stripe, and then I had a thought. I thought, I'll just have one. So this is after 5 year, 8 month. I just had one. And this was a Tuesday morning. Yeah? None of my family seen me. I was nicked in an Old Street magistrate's the following Monday. And I was down on a fucking recall. They sent me back to jail. You know, I was like, complete powerlessness. Now, Wilson talks about it in Bill's story. He says, if there was a devil, he's seen the Bosch Universal, and he certainly had me. You know, I had two little boys at home. Two little boys, beautiful sons. You know, Solomon and Jesse, my two boys, yeah? I was supposed to be going and seeing them. My old mum, who I adored, supposed to be going to see her. I didn't leave the crack house. I left, I got nicked, I went back to jail. And that has been my story. Complete powerlessness. The minute I put one in, all bets are off. So, what happened then? Yeah, more rehabs. You know, I was in and out of lots of different treatment centres, therapeutic communities, psychiatric hospitals. I was prescribed benzodiazepine sleepers and antipsychotics for nearly 30 years. You know. So this is what happened. This is where it gets good. Yeah. I found myself in a place of, it's described in chapter 3, pitiful, incomprehensible demoralisation, yeah? So get on this. See, God can't make this up. God can't make this up. 7 years ago tonight, yeah, I was sat in my mum's flat, yeah? She was lying on the sofa. She signed herself out of hospice. She was lying on the sofa and she was dying of cancer. And she died. And my first thought wasn't me mum, it weren't me brothers and sisters, it weren't me kids, it weren't nothing like that. My first thought was, I need her PIN numbers for them cards before my boys show up here. I need her morphine sulfate tablets and I need her benzos. Yeah? And I adored me mum. You know, I adored her. But something had happened. Something had happened. I was owned. Yeah? It was like, you know, inside, I was frozen. It's just like it was frozen. Yeah? So my ex-wife, not the first one, the third one. She was pregnant and she had a baby and I hadn't seen the baby and I'm sat there and my mum's died and I'm thinking, fuck. I weren't concerned about my mum. I was thinking, what am I going to do now? Where am I going to go? I've got nowhere to go. You know, people burn bridges. I didn't burn bridges. I fucking smoked them. They're gone. Everything's gone. Because if I'd had anywhere else to go, I wouldn't be stood here right now. That's a fact. Yeah? You know, I didn't decide that night when my stone was gone and I couldn't get one in me groin and I couldn't shoplift successfully and I stunk and I was riddled with hepatitis and my teeth had fallen out. I didn't decide at that moment that I was going to turn my life over to God and go out and help other addicts and alcoholics. I had no concept of where my life was going to go. So that was my bottom. That was the bottom. My mother's dead. My son's like that. You've got to get out of the flat. I'm changing my number anyway. It's a treatment centre up north. You've been in loads with them. Just go up there. Get up there. Get out of the way. I was like a bad smell in a room that wouldn't go away. So he took me up to this gaff in Scarborough. Yeah. And I'm like that. I walk in there and, you know, it was mainly older. I say older, fuck me, same age as me. I still see, it's nuts, isn't it? Right? It was mainly women of my age, right? They looked a lot older, yeah. Looked like the cast of, you know, Coronation Street, the rehab. You know, it was like that. I walk in the front room and they're all sat there. And then they see me limping in, you know. And I weren't this beautiful specimen that's in front of you today, trust me, yeah. I'm not a fucking vagrant member of the Taliban. Big shaggy beard, you know. Piss and blood stains down my trousers. Yeah, it was glamorous. Yeah, it was. Yeah, proper rock and roll, yeah. No fucking Range Rover anywhere, you know. I didn't have the bus fare. So, I've gone into the treatment centre and it was different to the other places that I've been in because as soon as I went in, they give me this. They give me this book, yeah? And the truth, I couldn't get my head round it. I couldn't. I was going in these lectures every day and they were talking about step one, step two, step three. And I'm like that, right, so I'm not a fucking alcoholic. You don't get it, do you? Uh-huh. You know, I'm a bad boy out of North London. That phone's going to start ringing with loads of bitches for me. You know, it's going to go like that. You don't know who I am. Yeah. And my therapist, old Scottish lady, old alcoholic, yeah, she went, I do know who you are because I can smell you. You fucks. And I had it off her. You know, the Scottish stuff, yeah, with my grandma and all that. I had it. I could trust her. You know, I could intuitively, because my story is God's put people in front of me to help me, and God's done things for me. God removed my bottle. I could no longer go out and graft. Yeah? He took away my ability to go and get money. Yeah? He stripped me down. He broke it down. He took everything from me. Yeah? And that was all for a really good reason. A great reason. And we talk about that in the 9-step promises. So, I'm in now. She's breaking down his book to me. And for the first time in my life, yeah, it wasn't about how bad a person I was. It wasn't about how much of a victim I'd been. Yeah, you poor, poor thing. It weren't about that. It weren't, you're just no good. I weren't getting it with a stick. And I weren't getting a cuddle. What I was getting was, I was getting identification from someone who come from a completely different space to me. Yeah? And she said something to me. She said, you've been very poorly. You've been very sick. And what we're going to do is we're going to show you exactly what's wrong with you. Yeah? So I'm like that. Well, okay. It weren't a con. It's only because I didn't have anywhere to go. You know, if I'd been out to go out and get some money, I wouldn't have been there. I started becoming receptive to it. So I'm sat there, and I'm in this. Someone's doing a life story in the rehab, yeah. And this woman, she's doing this life story. And she's like, you know, one of them shameless women, you know, like with pink and blue hair, loads of tattoos, and, you know, like, she looks like that, and she's sat there and she's talking about her life, and she's talking about levels of abuse that had happened to her. And I really felt it. I felt something. Because I hadn't felt anything for so long. And I hadn't shed a tear. I didn't have emotion. I didn't get angry. I didn't get happy. You know, I didn't get upset. I didn't laugh. So I sat in this group. I did laugh. Usually when I found out someone I didn't like had been nicked or gone to jail, or would have been some horrific accident, or someone had been armed or something, I'd be like that, yeah, fucking, you know, that's me, yeah. So this woman, Sherry, I don't know her. I can hardly fucking understand her because she's from Newcastle. And I'm like that. I'm feeling it. And I started crying. Because it weren't about me, it was about her. I connected with another human being's pain. You know, and I'm like that. Wow. I just couldn't stop fucking crying. So my therapist, Alison, she come and got me, took me in this group room, because they're all freaking out. Everyone in the rehab's freaking out. What's fucking wrong with him? Like that. Because I was like that. Right, and then I'm like, oh, what? She's lost her kids, you know. Sat in this room, and it just come out, and it come out, and it come out. Yeah? I don't think, because you know in the book we talk about the three pertinent ideas, say I'm an alcoholic, I can't manage my own life. I had that, I fucking nailed that, yeah? B, probably no human power could have relieved my alcoholism. Yeah, I get that all day. I was 49. I'd had a go. You know, I'd had a go. I know no human power can relieve my alcoholism. I know that. I adore my children. I take cancer for them, but I can't put down a fucking pipe for them. I know that. Here we get a bit kind of tricky, don't we? Because the next bit is God could and would if he was salts. So I got all these fucked up misconceptions around God because I got it mixed up with religions. And I'm like, that, right, okay. What happens now? Do I join the fucking Salvation Army? Nah, fuck that, right? I'm going to go Bin Laden. I'm going to go Big Beard. I'll scare all these cunts in here. Yeah, like that. Out on and out. To the east, yeah. But then, in Bill's story, you know, he talks about it, doesn't he? Ebby comes in, his mate, who he used to smash it with, because Ebby's a bad boy, you know. Ebby Thatcher, real deal, yeah? Ebby comes in, he's had the religious conversion. You know, that's happened to him. He sat there with Bill, and he'd been the last gasp from Ebby to Bill was, because he's having none of it, was, well, why don't you pick a power greater than yourself of your own understanding? It's up to you. It's not mine, it's yours. Pick your own. It's only a matter of being willing to believe in a power greater than yourself. Nothing more is required for you to make a beginning. Yeah, what happens then? Scales of pride and prejudice fall from his eyes, a new world comes into view. Because we're empowered. Without that statement, none of us would be sat here today. Yeah? And then further on in the book, see the beauty of this book. Yeah, I wave it about. The beauty of the book is, the more I read it, the less I know. It fixes everything for me. It shows me how to live. So I'm like that. I'm looking for some external God. But on page 55, what we're talking about, the great reality deep down within us, it is only there that it may be found. It was so with us. So were you. It's so were me. It's with us. It's in here. If only we clear the ground a little. We've got to clear the ground a little. How do I do that? Step four and step five. So I'm in the treatment centre and something has happened. I felt something for someone else. Yeah? You're talking about a man who abandons his kids, steals off his dead mother. You know. Frozen. I'm sat there, I thaw out, I connect with someone else. And I'm given a solution of recovery through this beautiful book. Yeah? So I've got to make these lists now. Because I've been in loads of treatment centres and detoxes. I've done all them lifelines and fucking life stories, you know. And it's just fucking Wilbur Smith. It's works of fiction I've written in the past. Complete works of fiction, you know. You know, I'm trying to present myself as some two Bob fucking Tony Montana, you know. For the first time in my life, I got honest. For the first time in my life. And it wasn't so much that I was a compulsive liar, because I was. Yeah. All I've got is a daily reprieve from that today. Yeah. It was more about I'd forgotten what the real truth was. Because for so long, I'd been behaving and reacting to life in a certain way. And I'd lied to myself so much, I'd forgotten what the truth was. So here you go. I'll get straight to it. I've done a step five. God come into my life. Yeah. That's what happened for me. Yeah. It happened. I felt different. Yeah. I felt different. I can feel it now. I felt different. Yeah. So at that time, how long got left, Darren? 10. At that time, as I said to yous, I've got two little girls, I've got two young daughters, I've got adult kids, I've got grandkids, yeah? At that time, I hadn't seen my little girl, the baby. She's called Nene. She's 8 now. I hadn't seen her. I was allowed out of the treatment centre to go down and see her. Yeah? So this is what happens. I've gone down. I'm sat in my ex-wife's mother's house, my ex-mother-in-law's house, on the sofa. She's a kip on the end of the sofa. Yeah, she's about 10, 11 months now, something like that. So she's woke up and she's just looking at me because she's never met me. She don't know who I am. And she's crawled along the sofa, yeah? She's sat on my lap. She's put her head on my heart, yeah? And she's looked in my eyes, yeah? And at that moment, I knew I'd never use drugs again. Yeah. I felt a love like I've never felt it before. My body was all hot. I was sweating. My heart was beating. I was like that. Whoa, what's going on here? I went back to the rehab and I told them what had happened. And they went, well, you've had a spiritual experience, haven't you? You've had a psychic change. And I went, what? Yeah. I went, what are you doing now then? 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Can't help some cunt like you. I'm like that. So I'm like that. All right. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm lit up. I was on fire. You know, proper. You know, I'm like that. I come out of the treatment centre. I had a job. Get on this, right? I had a job in a call centre, yeah? Working with like about 119-year-olds, yeah? And 5 years previous, I'd owned the fucking call centre, yeah? Right? So I'm in there working like that. I said to the governor, who's in AA, if I hit my target by lunch, can I go to a lunchtime meeting? He went, if you hit your target by lunchtime, you run the fucking department. I went, sweet. I hit my target by lunch. I was in the lunchtime meeting every day, next to the soup kitchen. I'm in the soup kitchen, yeah? I'm like that, come with me, you. Come on, I'll give you £2 for a can of special, bro, right? Come on, come with me. Dragging them all into the AA meeting. I'm coming out, I'm going to meetings at night, yeah? So I've done that for about 5 years, right? Really? You know, just insane with it. Because I love it. You know, I love it. It's such a beautiful, beautiful program. you know, the landmarks for me in my recovery have been, you know, the amends process. The same boy that put me in the treatment centre, yeah? I was in Portugal with Celtic Frank and Danny, yeah? They put on the best convention in the world. It's the best CA convention in the world. It's in Portugal. Started, there was only about 30 of us, wasn't there, Frank? Yeah, it's the bollocks. I'm over there. I get a phone call from me boy. And he says, can you come home? Your granddaughter's been born. And she weighs just under a pound. Yeah, she was born at 6 months. She's in critical care. Will you come home and see me, Dad? And this is a boy, the only quality time he's ever had with me was when he was brought to jails to see me. Yeah? You know, my little granddaughter, Hafsa, she's what, 4 or 5 now? She's right as rain. She's little, but she's right as rain. That's all a direct result of this program. You're talking about a man who I stole from, who I took things from. The rest of it, the growth steps, 10, 11, 12, yeah? I've got a relationship with God that I've got to maintain on a daily basis. Because if I don't maintain that relationship, I'm fucked. Step 12, I do that because I love it. Because you know what? Every time I help someone, it makes a bit of sense at the 7 rehabs, the 14 detoxes, and the 15-year in jail that I've done. Yeah? And abandoning me kids. And the good thing about it is, you know what? Yeah, 7 years ago tonight, yeah, I didn't have no ash for me pipe. So I was out in a bus stop, yeah? Out in a bus stop, my ma's dying, crawling about on my hands and knees, looking for a dimp, so I get some ash for me pipe, yeah? And now, you know, whenever I see someone doing the same thing, I go over to him, I'm like, here, wrap me fags, come to a meeting with me, please. Help me, I need you to come to this meeting with me. And I'm just like, oh, you know. It's a beautiful, beautiful program. My life today is beautiful. I've got relationships with my daughters. I've got relationships with my son. I've got a relationship here with my fiance. You know, everything. She can even listen to me share and don't run away. That's how much she cares about me, yeah? Everything on my life today has been given to me through Cocaine Anonymous and a God of my understanding. God bless you all. Thank you.